Rob Parr, Central Avenue. We're all about the Sunshine City. RadioCentral.com.
That's why you're afraid to come over here. Because a tiny part of you wants to jump. Because it would be so easy. But I don't want to jump. So I'm not afraid. I would never do that. I'm having too good of a time.
Are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
Hey, it's Kevin Nealon, and you're listening to the Homie Broadcast. Yeah.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Base vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio on RadioSaintPete.com. How the heck are ya? Good, man. I'm good. I'm real good. Got a bunch of stuff going on. I'm real good. We got Craig Dietrich, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, coming up here very shortly. He is a nature photographer, underwater nature photographer, under the sea photographer. He takes pictures under the water in the ocean. And he takes very nice pictures, ones that you will definitely want to check out. And you have that opportunity if you're living here in St. Pete all this month at Black Crow Coffee. We'll talk about that very soon. Craig will be here to tell us all about it. Go check out the website, man. I sat down. My friend Leah did the website, hmbradio.com, for me. Probably, I don't know. It's been a couple years ago. And I've been... Not necessarily, I wouldn't say stubborn, but busy and afraid to learn new things. But I went ahead and started playing around with it, and I redid it myself. And it looks, no offense, Leah, but I think I did a pretty good job. I'm not going to lie to you. And so go check it out. It's completely, I mean, it's similar. It's not, like, dramatically different. But it has some new things on it, some new placements of things. And just go check it out. I'm really proud of it. HMBradio.com. You can listen to old shows on there. You can find ways to contact the show. You can check out our sponsors down there at the bottom. It's just a cool little website, if you don't mind me saying. And then there's, you know, homemadepodcast.com as well. If you ever thought about getting into the podcasting game and have no idea to go about it, then I'm your man. I actually got a message earlier this week. I'm going to go help person out with their podcast. I can do that for you too. Check out homemadepodcasts.com. I'll come visit you. Just don't murder me. Okay? Very good. So other good news is we have we booked a comedy show. Joe down there at Tap House 61, one of my first HMB Radio's first sponsors ever. We were doing this open mic down there for many years, like 2 years. And now it went through this redesign, and, you know, they decided not to do the open mic anymore. But Joe said, I'd really like to do just a regular comedy show, if you want. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. So we're going to do that. September 23rd here at Tap House 61, 2061 Central Avenue, same place as always. Go to the HMB Radio page on Facebook and the events there, or hmbradio.com/events, and you can get some info there. Got some great comedians. We got Rachel Rowan, who's been working her way up for the past couple years now, and she start kicking us off. And then we got my buddy Jonas Presendu, and your headliner is Mr. Johnny B. I guess my new mentor now, Johnny B. from 102.5 The Bone, the Johnny B Show, 10 to midnight down there. So he will be closing out the show. So make sure you come check that out. That is, you know, the 23rd of next month. So we got a little while to go yet. But, you know, just go ahead and visit the Facebook page and go ahead and click interested. I like how they don't have just going and not going now. They have interested. That's what I click for everything because it still gives you notifications and stuff. But you don't have that heavy commit. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, check that out. You know, I had this, I don't know if I'm too, like, I shouldn't be upset about this, I guess, I don't know, but I had this troublesome experience earlier this week where an independent comedy show came through the Iberian Rooster. It's called the Butch and Femme comedy show. So the premise is that basically, they get some local comedians together. They dress up as ladies, as drag queens, and then do their set. Pretty funny, right? I mean, I went just to see people that I know dress up as ladies because that's pretty hilarious. And they went all out, boy. I'll tell you, they really, you know, Mike Morris had heels on, and Steve Miller had really just like costume makeup on. He really looked like a drag queen straight up. John J. Murray had Daisy Dukes on, and his body just made me uncomfortable. It's long and lean, and it just, it was weird. But funny, I'll give him that. And so they went ahead and did that. There was a $5 charge at the door. I didn't know that. And thank you, Shannon, for letting me borrow that $5 to get in. Well worth the $5, too, I might add. So I guess the deal was is that they were going to pay, or the rumor, apparently, was that the winner at the end, you know, audience decision or somebody's going to decide gets $100. Fair enough. You know, they're not making, you know, a lot of money off of this, but they're charging $5 at the door and, you know, somebody will walk away with $100. That's cool. I mean, I used to do that at the open mics, you know, the winner gets $100. So at the end of the show, I just had this feeling in my gut that none of these guys are going to get paid. My buddy Tommy Gill ended up winning the thing. That monster. Check out my Instagram. I got a good picture with Tommy in his choir robe and Cher wig and lipstick. Complete nightmare. Go check that out. Home_made_man on Instagram. But Tommy ended up taking home the title there. And I said, make sure you get your $100, dude. And Tommy said, oh, okay. And Tommy's not the most assertive guy on the planet. So I'm watching him. I watched the, and it was put on by a lesbian who's the Butch. Some PhD doctor, and then some who was the most unfunny person I've ever seen in my life. No offense, lady, but you're not good at your job. And this other dude who was slightly funnier, but not much. And her gimmick was just making fun of him because he was dressed in drag, too, and just saying how ugly he was and, you know, that he's gay. And at one point she called, used the slur for gay that starts with an F. And everyone kind of was like, I don't know, it's just weird hearing her say it. She just doesn't look like one of those persons that people that would say it. I don't know. Not that I don't have a problem with it. Go ahead and say it all you want. But made sure we knew that none of us should say that because she's allowed to because she's a lesbian. Okay. Don't tell me what to do, number one. But okay. And I don't know. It was just a lot of gay bashing on her end and more on the fact that these were straight guys. And, like, I got there was an undertone there that she just loved the fact that humiliating these straight men that were up there. Now, I also am so defensive at this point that I have a hard time enjoying levity at this point. I scolded one of my, or not scolded, but sent out a tweet about one of my people that I know, some Tampa Bay Times journalist that's a friend of a friend got this pin at Comic-Con that said it's a T-Rex and that dinosaur eats man, women inherit the earth. And I was just like taking a, I mean, it's whatever, it's fine. But I just imagine she seems like one of these people that would be very upset if it said the opposite of that, you know, that old argument. And then somebody goes, that's a Jurassic Park quote, dude. And I was like, oh God, I can't even enjoy levity anymore because I'm so defensive. So maybe I'm just being defensive in the case there too. But I talked to other people and they said, yeah, I kind of see what you're saying there. I can kind of see that. So I just, you know, this lady just bothered me. And then I knew she wasn't going to pay. I just, something told me that Tommy was going to walk home empty-handed or drive home empty-handed. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. They had Rachel Rowan, who I booked for our show on the 23rd. She had a guest set there that she wasn't paid for either. And they ended up having about 80 people show up for this Butch and Femme comedy tour. And $5 a head, that's $400. I asked my friend who works at Iberian Rooster if they took any of the door. Nope. So those two people walked away with $200 each in their pocket and did nothing. They set up the event, but and it's a good idea, like I said, but didn't give. Now, there's just something off-putting about that. Is it wrong? No. I don't know how these guys didn't, you know, ask for money or see what was going on. But, you know, I talked to Rachel about it, and she was like, I didn't know I was supposed to ask for money. What? You know, I mean, it's, if you could, these people can do whatever they want, right? I mean, if you want to work for free, go ahead and humiliate yourself for free, by all means, do so. I don't really care, but it just seems like the ethical thing would have been to break off those guys $20 each or give the winner $100. You're still walking home with $150 each. Which is a freaking fortune for that type of event on a Tuesday night. I don't know. There's just something unethical about it. So, F you, the Butch and Femme comedy tour, and I will be advocating against your stupid show that you have, because it's not... I mean, to just hear, I'm not going to go protest you or anything, but I certainly will not go to another one, and I encourage you not to as well until they start paying... these people who make their show, who perform for their show and do all the work, something. I mean, geez, these people, you know, Steve said he spent $125 on his outfit, for God's sakes, with makeup and a dress, and he looked like a horror show. It cost him $125. He knew what he was getting into, but, you know, there's just, I mean, come on, just some sort of gratitude for these people doing it for you. And they acted like that, getting this title, Mr. Femme Butch or whatever it was the prize. It's like nobody knows what that is. It's just your made-up thing. It's not a prize. It's just a title that means nothing to anyone. Doesn't even seem to mean much to them because they don't really put much... it seems like it's just a money-making scheme for them. And it's a good scam, too. I'm not going to lie. They got a good scam going. But so F you, Butch and Femme Comedy Tour. Make sure you do not go to their shows if they ever come back, unless they start paying their people. That would be nice. So, anywho, yeah, that's what happened this week. That was my bothersome thing that's still tearing at me days later. You know, say what you will. I hate to see my friends get taken advantage of for people that suck. You know, they're not even good. They're terribly unfunny. I mean, it was cringe-inducing watching that woman get up there and try to pick on this dude. And he was a little better, but not much. The only comedy came from the actual comedians up there. So, I don't know. I hope you guys will choose your gigs wisely. Any good... Somebody who's... I always pay people, even if it's a free show, you know, because it's the right thing to do. You're using somebody's time. So it's just the right thing to do. And again... You know, you can't judge other people based on your own actions, but I don't know. I mean, right? Come on. Am I wrong here? I don't know. Maybe I am. I don't know. Anywho, Craig Dietrich, I believe that is his name. I'm sorry, Craig, if I'm getting it wrong beforehand, will be here. Talk about the show at the Black Crow Comedy or Black Crow Coffee Shop here in St. Petersburg. All month in August, it'll be up. But we're going to learn more this week on the Homemade Broadcast on RadioSt.Pete.com. How did you get hooked up with Black Crow and doing this show here?
It's a good friend of mine. He lives here, so we come over and visit when we do our art shows out here in the park. And we came over for a cup of coffee, and I just fell in love with the shop, and I had asked if I could do it, and she was very nice to allow me to.
Cool. Yeah, that easy. I guess having friends is always helps. Yeah,
it does. Yeah. Definitely.
But you're not only in coffee shops, but you're in real galleries. I mean, you're a real deal. You were just telling me, like, this is your job, which is awesome.
It is my job. I'm in hotels, I'm in restaurants, and I am in galleries.
How did you kind of get into to this field? I mean, you've been doing it for since you were a kid, right?
That's really neat. It has been. It's photography has been my only job per se. And as I was talking to you, it's kind of I feel a little guilty because I love my job so much. But it's something that I just picked up and I really loved it at a very young age. And I've been doing it now for the last 26 years of my life.
Wow.
And it's been amazing. But the underwater portion of it is actually just kind of funny how when your girlfriend comes home and you say, honey, I need to talk to you. And we had to have a conversation about how we're going to move from Charlotte, North Carolina to Monterey, California, so pursue the underwater field and start really applying. There's not, you know, there's a lake in Charlotte, but
right.
not much.
not as good views, yeah, as the oceans there.
So literally, we went from, you know, a 2,900-square-foot home in Charlotte, North Carolina, to a 650-square-foot apartment in Monterey, and it took 6 years of 2 years in Monterey and then 2 years here in Florida. And then I started doing art shows. And it's been another 4 years of just doing art shows here in South Florida.
So you were a Navy photographer, right?
I was. I did 5 years, 3.5 years on an aircraft carrier. And I did aerial photography. So I used to hang out of helicopters and take pictures of the battle group and do some very unique stuff. And I got out and I worked with families and children, for 18 years of doing that until I just wanted to. I've been a scuba diver since 27, and I just wanted to combine the two so badly. And I wanted to. I was one of those people who believe in. You gotta go all in.
Yeah. So I'm kind of amazed that I thought about joining the Army out of high school, and the guy gave me the, if you want to fly helicopters, man, I was like, I do. That sounds pretty awesome. And then I ended up not doing it because I heard my friends that had joined the Army said, you're not going to be a helicopter pilot, dude. There's no way. But you actually got a job that you wanted, which is amazing.
It's so funny you say that because I literally. My life story is, I'll try to entertain because I have plenty of stories, but I was at the MEP station, like literally, like that's where you go. I've already signed up. They told me I was going to be a photographer, and then they tried to give me the 1-2 switch just go in, and if you want to be a photographer, you can sign up later for that,
right.
But we want you to just go do this. And for a naive kid from a very small town, I don't know how they didn't, you know, I was a pretty young 18-year-old.
What did they want you to do?
Oh, just go in undesignated. Yeah. And then, cause they have lots of spots for that. But photography was something they were going to have to send me to school for. And it's a, you know, it's a coveted deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all I signed up for. I knew what I wanted to do. I was very hell bent on my love for photography already. I'd already, you know, it was a major part of my high school. I had, you know, really knew that this was something I wanted to do. And I was lucky enough to hold on to what I wanted, and they finally gave
it to
me.
So you just said, nah, I'm just going to do photography.
I'm going to do it.
Like,
and
all
they,
right.
It actually ended, I signed up for 4 years, and I had to, at that time, sitting there at the desk, it's like a scene out of a movie. Like, you know, they had the light on me, the whole like nine, like they had the nice guy, mean guy trick, the whole thing. I mean, they were really working on me hard. It took like 4 hours for me to just hold on and just say, no, I'm staying with what I signed up for. So I had because they sent me to school, I had to tack on another year. So I signed up for 4 and ended up having to do 5 years, but it was quite incredible. And I cannot tell you, unfortunately, how many guys showed up at the photo lab, said, the guys told me that I could just come in here
and just do this
and just shoot this.
Like,
and,
no.
And I had to look at him with like just that pure, like, I feel so bad,
yeah.
But it doesn't work. Like, you know, it
right.
was really heartbreaking because it happened. I mean, that's a true, you know, people coming in and saying, you know, this is what they told me. And it was like,
nope,
yeah,
it doesn't exist.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so,
jeez. So what was it like? Like, what kind of things did you take pictures of in the Navy?
You know, people ask me that, and I think that's a fantastic question because it is very interesting. So you would do distinguished visitors, which we were actually Desert Shield and Desert Storm. So we had, you know, everybody coming on board. I was Dan Rather's personal photographer. I was General Schwarzkopf's personal photographer when he came on board. So I did all the distinguished visitor guests that came on board, many famous people, lots of reporters, lots of dignitaries, all this, you know, big people that come on board. So they want pictures with the captain. They want pictures with the admiral. So it was a very important thing that I did. And then I volunteered and became the aerial photographer. So they would send me up, and I'd take these battle group shots and, you know, changing when a new ship would come in, we would do a picture together. So, you know, show of power, you know, the show of power pictures that you see of a battle group and stuff like
right,
that.
Right.
And then you do award ceremonies, you do reenlistments, you do investigations. So we kept ourselves pretty busy.
So, I mean, did you like the job?
I loved it. I just didn't love being on the aircraft. Yeah, yeah. You know, after people have to understand, you know, you do 3.5 years on an aircraft carrier, and for me, that was my time. I spent a year, so 6 months each time, so, you know, a year out to sea, and you're in port, you know, 12 days out of each 6 month tour. And I had learned that I actually like to see the sun, mm-hmm. and I just knew that, you know, whatever rank you are or whatever you're doing, you're still on that air.
Yeah.
It doesn't change. You know, no matter sure. who you are, you're still out to sea. You're still working 7 days a week, 12 hours on, 12 hours off. But for me, it was the best thing from a kid from a small town to be able to go to Australia. You know, I went to, you know, we lived in Japan. I went to Korea, like just all over the world. And it was one of the most amazing things when you're young and you want to see what the world is about. It really opened my eyes and it really taught me good work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
And I just came from that. And it really was one of the best things that ever happened to me.
That's one of the things that I think I missed out on from having that experience, a military experience. My dad said the same thing. He went to Germany and he got to experience, you know, something else. I've been out of Florida maybe a few times. That's about it. And he went to Germany, and then my buddy was in Korea for, you yeah. know, a period of time, and Kuwait, which he didn't particularly care for Kuwait that much. But, you know, still, you got to see what the world's like, because I think people have a very naive sense of the world because they don't know what else is out there.
I don't think you realize how true that statement really is. I mean, it's an amazing world, and it really opened my eyes. And the best thing I ever got out of this whole deal was the fact of, you know, I'm sitting in the Philippines, and these people, I mean, they live every day with stuff that you can't imagine we have and we take for granted and they don't have. And they're the happiest people I've ever met. And they just, you know, I remember...
Yeah, they don't know any better.
Yeah, I remember a kid with a Walkman. And he had one tape, you know, and he would listen to that tape over and over and over again because that's all he had. And, you know, it was so cool to be young and realize, like, oh my God, you know, I'm thankful for so many things. And it's a great thing to be able to learn that when you're 19 and 20, because that's a great lesson. And I've taken it. I've never not... I literally go to my refrigerator, and if there's orange juice in there, it's like I'm
stoked.
There's like little confetti comes out. Like, I'm so excited because
yeah.
we were drinking stuff like that. Again, the food that we ate on the ship and the stuff, the fuel used to actually get in our water, and you would be drinking JP5 fuel in your, you know, orange juice. So it was orange in color, but
yeah.
So it was like, it's just the funniest things that you can really appreciate. And I'm very thankful to have that kind of frame of mind, that I'm very thankful for the smallest things. And on that same note, it's kind of, when you do travel, once you kind of get that bug and you do see that world is a bigger place and there's lots of things, I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
You know, it really opened my eyes. You know, I do know my family, and I know friends that haven't left the little town that I grew up in. And, you know, a big vacation to them is come down to Florida, you know, Disney
yeah.
World or something. You know?
Right, somewhere safe. I'm afraid to travel now, and maybe I shouldn't be, but, you know, you see the news, and I went on a, I don't know if you do cruises, I went on a cruise, and I hated it.
No more cruises for me, young
no,
man.
No, we went to Nassau. Nassau is hell on earth. It's beautiful,
yes.
But it's hell on earth. It looks like a bomb exploded the whole place. And, I mean, the Bahamas, too, you know, But I've been to the Bahamas, not Nassau, and it's great.
Yes.
It's fantastic. But Nassau is just the worst. But I'm afraid to go anywhere now to travel. Am I being stupid?
I think that I feel like I do tell people, you know, I don't know if you do it a lot, but if you drive on Interstate 95, I think you have more guts than anybody I know. You know, so if you can survive out here on those roads, I think you should have no fear of traveling anywhere in the world.
Have you ever had an experience where something went down when you were traveling? A victim of crime or anything like that?
I did. In the Philippines, it got a little crazy. They had these little thing called jeepneys, and they would pick you up. And I had a couple guys pick me up, and then he picked up a couple of guys to literally
pick you up,
pick me up. And I actually, thank God I'm a little person, and yeah. I know jokingly I had to jump out of the side where you're not supposed to be able to fit because I knew things were going to go south.
What would they have done? Robbed you?
Oh, yeah. They were going to
take
your
stuff.
Yeah.
Which is,
again, it's kind of not uncommon. But, you know, in the end, I really believe in, I'm pretty comfortable with this whole world is, you know, whether you're here, you know, Fort Lauderdale, you know, I live in Jupiter. It's a pretty safe place, but every place has got its, you know, bad side
sure,
to it. So
sure,
I'm
sure.
Really
well, I mean, if you go a few blocks that
yes, sir.
Way, it's
exactly.
Bad
so you don't.
So I mean,
that's
yeah.
my point, and that's why I'm like, I'm willing to take those chances. I'm very, very lucky because I do travel for work, and I just can't get enough of. And that's where the ocean came in. To me, it's just a whole nother exploration of space that I think is. I just couldn't get it out of my head. So I every time I hit the water, no matter where I am, you know, it's that looking down into the ocean and just wondering what's underneath there.
Yeah.
And I just can't get enough, and that's why I just keep diving.
Again, I'm terrified of the water. I'm not terrified of the water, okay? I'll tell you what, I had this experience when I was probably, I don't know, 7 years old. Me and my mom and stepdad swam out to the buoy. And so we did that, and we're kind of floating around there, and then all of a sudden you look down, and there was this huge shadow that was just lurking underneath of us, and we freaked out and went to the shore, and then I was like, I don't think I'm going to go in the water anymore. I think I'm done with the water. So I'll, you know, maybe go up to my knees or something like that every once in a while, but I don't really swim that often. I mean, have you ever had any scary instances in the water?
Well, you know, I definitely have, but you're talking about somebody that spends a lot of time in the water. I think what was funny, I thought you were going to pick up on, I told you, I didn't actually get certified to scuba dive until I was 27.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a late bloomer, to say the least. It's because I was scared of the water.
Oh, really?
Growing up, I wouldn't even put my feet in the water. You know, I was scared of everything.
What changed?
I just, I had a girlfriend. And
yes,
she
do that.
Got a free trip to Cancun, and she said, you know, hey, I got this free trip, you know, why don't we go? And they have scuba diving, and she said, I'm going to get certified. So what was I going to say? Like, oh, no.
I would have been like, see ya, enjoy your scuba. I'll be at the bar.
And the funny part of the story is I took the dive, I got certified, and then I came home and quit my job that I've had for 5 years, a very good job, and I became a scuba instructor.
Wow.
And lived down in the Keys for 6 months and just started learning about diving and wanted to be a really good diver, and I wanted to teach people how to dive. So I did become an instructor, and I kind of, my life changed from there. So that one time of hitting the water, like literally just was destiny for me to be where I am today. It's pretty incredible. But yeah, it took me... It took me, you know, 27 to finally break that, you know,
break the fear.
That, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm pretty comfortable with telling people, you know, when you see my work, I have pictures of great whites. I have pictures of, you know, I swim at sharks on a regular basis. I there's not anything. I'm pretty. I've seen a lot of stuff, and I've been very. There's been some precarious positions that I've been in that there's currents that you have to deal with. You're dealing with, you know, it's not so much the sea life. It's the ocean can be pretty unforgiving in that aspect. And I come back because of, I just trained really hard to be a great scuba diver. And it's something I tell people, if you're able to break that fear, it's one of those, I just want to get you there, you know, and that's where my photography comes in. I there's a real goal in when you look at my work, to want to get people to understand, like, wow, that's what you see. I get that a lot. Like, that's what you see. And it's like, Yeah. And it's the most amazing gift for me when people write to me and tell me, hey, you kind of broke me out of this mold of, you know, I've been on the fence about, you know, should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? Should I make the time to get SCUBA certified? And I was the one that, it was like, I teeter-totter, I pushed them over that and they got certified. And now they're diving and they're exploring and they're having the most amazing time. And to be a part of that is, it's a pretty cool feeling. It's something very special to me. And I love those emails and I'm lucky that I do get them. And it's really cool. My customers, it's one of the most incredible things to me that people say, you know, this is what's down there, huh? And I'm like, yeah, it's an amazing place.
Yeah, that's cool. Craig Dietrich is here this week on the Homemade Broadcast. He's has a show at the Black Crow Coffee Shop, which is right across the street, 722 2nd Street North. It opens Saturday. It'll be open all month. So when you say that you see, that's what you see. Now, is that really what you see, or is that, because it seems like maybe you do some maybe photo editing maybe to make it a little more rich, like do you Instagram? Are you familiar with that?
I do.
Because I've taken some photos. I mean, this is different, but it's kind of the same. And you can edit them and make them a lot better. is that what do you do with your
work? There is some editing in there, but I do not. I am an old school. You know, I grew up on film. Film is this thing you used to put in the camera. Yeah. It was a very unique thing back then. And I grew up, you know, when I teach underwater photography, I try to explain that I actually shoot it right in the camera. You know, it's about actually taking your time and exposing it. And what you're really talking about, if you look at my work, is I'm actually bringing lighting under the water with me. And this is where it's actually bringing out the natural colors that you're seeing. So I'm not a heavy editor. I'm not a real big fan. I don't own Photoshop, and I get made fun of because I know my friends always say even if you owned it, he wouldn't know what to do with it.
Right. So, that's why I don't have audio software either. I don't really edit that much.
So it's when you look at my work, it's pretty pure to what you're actually seeing. It's the strobes that are on my camera system, so they're underwater strobes. They're going off, and you lose color as you go into the water. So those strobes, you're actually just bringing out the natural color that's there.
See, I feel like that's more honest. Like, that's a real photographer. Because there's, I think, like, the criticism of photography is that, you know, is it an art because you're just snapping an instant? You're letting a machine do the work. But when you have to bring your own lighting and really capture that image, it's not cheating with the software. You know what I mean? And you can cheat. I mean, nobody will really know.
Yeah, underwater, definitely, there's a playing field there that I'm really proud of, because it's a lot harder to cheat in underwater.
Yeah.
It's a very, you know, there's so much going on. You have, you know, you're a scuba diver and you have a lot of things you have to pay attention to, how much air you have, how deep are you, you have currents, you have a lot of stuff going on that side. Then you have a camera that you're now a photographer. So, you have a lot of variables in there that you don't have so much on land. And then you have, you know, lenses that can bring you very close to that subject. In underwater, when you look at my work, I have to be within 2 to 3 feet of my subjects.
Oh, wow.
So when you see a shark, it's not everybody.
It's right there.
Yes. And that's one of the things people really, when they see me work, we get back on the boat and they're like, oh my God. Like, they are definitely blown away in the sense of when I say I'm 2 to 3 feet, I am 2 to 3 feet away from my subjects.
Wow.
And it's, that is something that is really separates me, because there's a whole approach. How do you get close to a shark? People don't understand that sharks actually want no part of us. Mm-hmm. They don't want, we're breathing underwater. The bubbles are very loud. Fish, it's annoying. I mean, if I had an air horn next to you, you know, are you going to come close to me? It's probably, you know, it's very difficult. And so there's an art form of actually getting close to these subjects. It's letting them be themselves. It's letting them not, you know, where I see people and I teach them like, hey, you got to relax. And then, but they have this camera in their hands and they see a turtle and they're just like gone. Yeah. Oh man. They're just like, and this turtle's like, oh my God, you know, it's just like, what did you do? You know? And it's like, they just take off as fast as they can.
Right.
And then they come back and they give me like, they shrug of like, oh, what happened? And I'm like, well, what do you think happened? You swimming at
freaked
the thing. Like,
out.
Yeah, you freaked them out, you know? And it's, you know, this whole thing about having the camera, you know, they just, they're so hell-bent on getting that image where it's they don't realize
everyone wants that shot you know, that they can have and cherish.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's like I said, you don't have that long lens to just, you know, zoom in and take it. It's really a whole different deal. And that's what, you know, when you see good underwater photography, it's not as easy as people think. So a lot of people, you know, it's really an equalizer of where you get a lot of people that are great land-based photographers that have, you know, these portfolios that, you know, will blow your mind. And then, oh, I'm going to get into underwater photography. And then all of a sudden, it's like,
screw that.
The brakes come on and they're like, well, wait a second. I was just amazing. But there's just so many more variables that go into it. And that's what I love about it. I mean, it's so difficult. It's so appealing. You know, to me, that's really what, and I'm really known for my wide angle. You know, wide angle underwater photography is probably the most difficult. You know, two strobes, you got a lot of a huge, you know, a much bigger system. You know, macro is one, you know, it's a different setup. The subjects don't move as much. And so when you're dealing with wide angle, it's really my, it's the hardest end of it. And that's really where is my strongest suit is because I do some, you know, I have whales, I have, you know, big pods of dolphins, great white shark, you know, some really, really cool stuff of being very close to some of the most incredible scenes.
What's been your favorite trip there? You got the most pictures or just the most beautiful place you've got to dive in?
My place for me has been, it's called Socorro, Mexico. And it just is one of the most magical places to me on this planet. It's you get to see these giant Pacific manta rays that, you know, their wingspan are 18 feet across. I got to see a humpback whale with a brand new calf. I got to see the, you know, massive schools of fish. It's hard for me to describe other than just looking at my work and going from there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, where all have you been? You've been to so many places.
I have. I've been to Australia. I've been to Socorro a bunch of times. That's in Mexico. I've been to the Sea of Cortez. I just got back from French Polynesia, Tahiti, and all the islands over there. I dive a lot in Jupiter, you know, where I'm from. I don't think people realize.
I mean, Florida is a great
diving
spot.
Oh, my God. You know, it's funny because of the fact of, you know, when people do look at my work, my portfolio, I have traveled a lot, but 50% of my work is South Florida, and I'm very, very proud of that because I'm think it's one of the most amazing places, and that's why I live where I do, and I love where the diving, you know, people, you know, the budget in the Keys is, you know, they really push people come down. That's their bread and butter is having people. The right. Keys is nice, but where I live, it's incredible. It's just, you know, Jupiter, Florida, and West Palm Beach, and all that area there. It's got some of the most, because the Gulf Stream actually comes in very, very close to Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen some of the most incredible, you know, Goliath groupers. We have turtles. We have, you know, stingrays, morays, all these beautiful reefs, big schools of fish, and lots of sharks.
So when you go down and you're doing a dive, how many pictures are you taking? How do you know, like, oh, this one's a good one? I'm gonna print this one.
Well, that's a really good question because I don't know. You know, what I love about that question to me is my work is for me. I'm a very, very specific person. I have, you know, as we say, issues in the sense of, you know, my work is, it's not, I'm not following anybody. I don't, you know, whatever's trending, it doesn't matter. Like, I just don't pay attention. Like, my work, every single piece that you see of mine, it's for me. Like I, it's really what turns me on. It's what I think I really love. And I'm very, very specific about anything I show. If you were to look at my website, I think it's 40 images total. Whereas, you know, I've been on other people's websites, you know, they have, you know, 600 images or whatever. And mine's only 40 because that's all I want to show my viewers. Like it's very specific to me, and it's like each piece it's very thought out for me that I'm in love with it. And then the gut wrenching part is, you know, is anybody going to get what I see? And the most incredible part of my career is where people have responded as positive as they have towards my work. And, you know, you talk about a high. It's a high to me where it's like, I just love what I did, but inside my stomach's upset. I'm wondering how it's going to go over. And then somebody comes over and says, hey, I want to buy this. And I, you know, whether it's my little piece or I do up to, you know, 40 by 60, you know, every piece that somebody buys is just, it's like this wave of just euphoria of like, oh my God, somebody sees my work enough that they see what I see.
Yeah.
And they want to, and they enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, it's something that it's never going to wear off on me.
Right.
I mean, it's something that I take, I just, you know, I have one of the most amazing experiences I have is when I have like little kids buying my work and it's like, their mom's like, you know, he saw your work and he made me come back. You know, he emptied his piggy bank and he came to want to buy one of your pieces. I mean, you know how that's a really incredible, you know, very positive thing to be able to say that somebody looks at what you did and they want to, you know, they want to be a part of it.
Do you have social media where people can find you?
I do. I'm on Facebook for Craig Dietrich Underwater Photography. I'm on Instagram as ScubaMan11. And
what's the 11 stand for?
I played baseball.
Oh, you're number 11?
A little kid. Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, I actually just followed you a little while ago. I didn't know that. I had to find you, but it took a little while, but we finally did it. Craig, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, there you go. Make sure you go check out that exhibition at Black Crow Coffee all month long. Thank you to Craig again for coming in. Appreciate it. Thank you to our sponsors, Tap House 61, 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg. Taphouse61.com, baby. Easy as that. Comedy show coming up on September 23rd. Make sure you check it out. Thank you to K9 Holistics. K9Holistics.com. Is your dog a jerk? Well, Christine over there will stop your dog from being a stupid jerk so you can take it out and enjoy life again. Check her out. Free consultations. K9Holistics.com. And Truvy Salon and Spa. My girl Chrissy Parker cutting up hairs and loving what she's doing and doing a great job doing it. Truvy, T-R-U-V as in Victor, Y, salonandspa.com. Make an appointment and make yourself feel better by looking better, right? I got to get these people to give me something to read. They're like, you just do a great job. Just do what you do. Sorry, guys. I hope that's up to par. Thank you for tuning in this week to the Homemade Broadcast. If you're listening on Radio St. Pete, stay tuned for Frank Rivera's jazz show live from his music room in Dunedin, Florida. The Indie Circuit coming up after that. If you're listening on podcast, hey, thanks. Make sure you subscribe. Give us a rating. HMB Radio Tampa Bay on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. What else? Facebook.com/HMB Radio. Facebook.com/Radio St. Pete. Engage on Twitter, home_made_man, and Radio St. Pete, Radio STPETE. Same thing on Instagram. Give us a follow. Check out HMBRadio.com. Let me know what you think of the new site. I did it myself. Pretty proud of it. All right. Have a great week, everybody. I will talk to you next week. Will Koontz, HMB Radio, Radio St. Pete. Later.